Hi, welcome to the Fantastic Forecast, episode 439. I'm David Elliott. And listen up, David Elliott, this one's for you. Oh, hey, that's me. Today, the 439th issue of the Fantastic Four. It's Fantastic Four, Volume 3, Number 10, from October 1998. Reed Richards, Alone, by Chris Claremont and Salvador La Roca. Our story begins at the heart of creation, the corner of the omniverse known as the Core Continuum, home to Roma and her subordinate and/or girlfriend, Opal Luna Saturnine. Roma has the chessboard, and an image of Reed Richards is being projected onto the board, besides all the other unrecognizable pieces. Opal says, "You should have told him flat out, right from the beginning. Look at that man. He's had the Crystex for days, and he's no closer to a solution now than when he started." Luna tells her, "Patience. I have faith." Opal calls her a fool and says, "Reed is clueless." But Roma insists that he can rise to the challenge. Next, we see the guy they're talking about, Reed Richards, in his lab, which appears to be underwater since there's a lot of fish outside his window, which is usually a dead giveaway that you're underwater. So he's got the crystal, data crystal from Roma, and he's been studying it, but he's been unable to access the data held inside. So he doesn't know what it's for. In this case, for a change, Reed is clueless, and he gets upset with himself. He throws his cup of coffee across the room, and he says he's had enough. He feels like his head is about to explode. Back with the women, Opal says, "See? I told you so. What's next? Is the Omniverse really doomed?" And Luna replies, "Reed Richards wasn't our only hope." Uh-oh. Don't tell me. Reed has a sister! Actually, I think he does have a sister. But Huntara isn't the only hope, that's for sure. Reed heads into another room. It's kind of like a hollow deck, a danger room kind of a thing. And he tells it to execute a dangerous program called the 113 Bravo. And these holograms appear, and it looks like Reed is in a devastated version of Manhattan, after it's been attacked by three of the FF's oldest and dangerous foes. Let me guess. Mole Man, the Skrulls, and, Miracle Man. Okay, maybe those are the oldest, but not the most dangerous. And then the three foes appear. Blastar. Yes, that's an old foe. And dangerous. Annihilus. Yes, another of their oldest foes. Very dangerous. And Terax. Yes, very dangerous. Not one of the oldest, but he's... If you saw these three dudes coming at you, you would piss your pants. They're all pretty badass. So the three of them team up and all start fighting Reed at once. But Reed is stretching around, making it hard for the three villains to get a hand on him. And after a few pages of fighting these vicious bad guys, Reed feels a whole lot better. He feels great. Has fighting these villains turned him on? I think it has. And so it's early in the morning, just as the sun is about to come up. Reed goes into Franklin's room, tucking him into bed. It looks like he just put Franklin to bed, but that can't be right. He looks at Franklin's new dog and wonders how they can return him home, though he suspects that if he separates Franklin and his dog, it'll break both of their hearts. Reed heads into his bedroom, where Sue is sound asleep, and he wakes her up. He is horny, and they start getting it on. Later, Ben and his new friend Alyssa Moy are coming home from a trip to Paris in her flying car. She says the car needs a tune-up. Can Precision Tune handle flying cars? Probably not. She says her favorite jazz club and Vietnamese restaurant are in Paris? Holy crap! Ben must really like this woman. He says he had a good time, and she gives him a kiss on the cheek and flies off in her car. So Ben heads inside and sees Johnny is up early. He's examining the shackles that Alessandre Stewart was wearing, and he tries to burn through the shackles with his flames, but he can't. He says if he tries to melt the shackles off Alessandre, it might kill her. Even though it appears that the shackles are already off, so I don't know what the deal is. So he flies back to Four Freedoms Plaza to check up on her, and Alisande has returned to her old self with the dark hair, not a warrior woman anymore. He walks in and she bows for him, showing him proper respect, which makes him uncomfortable. He tells her they're friends and there's no need for her to bow to him. Gee, Johnny, why argue with a good thing? She tells him that a slave cannot afford friends. Even the last issue, she said she wasn't a slave. She says that she's still a slave as long as she wears a thing around her neck, which is the same thing around her neck that Johnny was trying to burn earlier. So I guess there must be two neck shackles. I'm not sure where Johnny got the extra neck shackle. Johnny tells Alisande that he got her some fresh clothes for her to put on, and she takes him and comes out a few minutes later, and guess what kind of shirt he gave her? A very, 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 very tight tank top. Go figure. And the tank top says Luna across the front, which is kind of weird considering there's another character in this book also named Luna. Johnny offers to take her back to Scotland, but she says that her people were all killed by invaders, and she was the only one who was spared for some reason. Maybe they saw her in a tank top. Back at the warehouse, Reed and Sue know Johnny's secret, that he's been hiding some lady he smuggled back from another dimension. Reed mentions that they shouldn't be at Four Freedoms Plaza because it's not safe. You know, it's probably a lot safer now that the FF aren't living there. Reed mentions that he has a meeting at Empire State University, so he kisses Sue goodbye and hails a cab, driven by a guy who looks like he's up to no good. And he is up to no good. He locks the doors and he flicks a switch and sprays gas into the back of the cab. Reed recognizes the guy as Hawkshaw, a member of the press gang. Sounds like a group of reporters, but they are super-powered members of the Genosian State Security Force. Somehow, Reed opens the door and gets out, even though we saw Hawkshaw lock the doors. I guess Reed unlocked it. Usually, Hawkshaw uses his powers to draft Genosian civilians into serving the government, and Reed wonders, why come after me? Next, some bald chick in fishnet stockings, her name is Jenny Ransom, another Genosian, leaps toward Reed and says, one sure way to find out. She rams into Reed, and Reed goes stretching like a rubber band. There's a black girl there, her name is Punch Out, one of Jenny's friends, warns her that Reed can stretch his body and that she shouldn't ram into him like that, even though it's too late. And he can stretch back. And with that, Reed stretches back and slings Jenny into a group of trash cans. Reed steps over to Punch Out and punches her out. So hard, she goes flying into the river with the rest of the dead bodies. Jenny shoots some explosive rays at Reed, but they bounce off his body and right back at her, causing a big explosion and blowing a huge hole in the pier. Next, Reed hears someone clapping, and he turns and sees a blonde guy wearing purple and blue, and he recognizes him as Peter Petruski, the trapster, you know, Pastepot Pete. I'm not sure why he's hanging out with the Genosians. And just then, the bald chick breaks through the wooden pier under Reed and grabs him, and she pulls him down into the water, where Punch-Out is still there, and both of the women grab onto him, but Reed stretches out of it and up out of the water, where Pete is back on the pier, ready to spray his creamy white goo all over Reed, surrounding him in a globe of paste, which hardens, and Reed breaks through it, and then it's hard to tell what happens next. But it kind of looks like Pete gets hit with some bricks from his hardened paste, knocking him down. And Reed grabs the two women, but Pete gets up and puts this chemical on Reed's uniform, which has an effect on the unstable molecules, so his unstable molecules become stable and the costume can't stretch anymore. But Reed can stretch, but his powers are pretty useless unless he gets naked. And really, other than Ben Grimm, does anybody want to see that? Well, I guess it's better than seeing the Thing naked. That's pretty awful. I'm going to have nightmares for a very long time after seeing the Thing buck naked recently in commercials for that new movie. Oh my god. Pete puts his hood over Reed's head and attaches a collar to seal it up nice and tight. And then Pete goes on about how awesome he is that he defeated Mr. Fantastic. Even though he's not awesome at all. Not a bit. Punch-Out goes over to Reed and does what she does best. She punches him out, knocking him out. They load Reed up into a van, while Pete stands there triumphantly, exclaiming, I did it! I really did it! Me and Mr. Fantastic went at it! One-on-one! Toe-to-toe! But isn't it actually 3-on-1? Or was it 4-on-1, if you count Hawkshaw, who just kind of disappeared in this story. And I beat him! Hey, you Mr. Fantastic, who's laughing now? Listen up, Pastepot Pete, this one's for you. And that is the end of the issue. A story called Reed Richards Alone, which could have been called Reed Richards Embarrassed, because this may very well be his most humiliating moment. How is he ever going to live this down? Coming next time, the rest of the Fantastic Four realize that Reed is missing, and they track him down, and the trail leads to the island country of Genosha. I bet Reed will be like, "Oh, I was kidnapped by the Genosians," completely admitting the fact that he was nailed by Pastepot Pete. That's what I would do. So if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes of iTunes and find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over.